Good morning. I did want to mention, too, about I've sent out those on the email list, prayer requests sometimes by Bonnie Kohler in Knoxville. Now, she and her husband moved down here from Wisconsin about 3 years ago, and neither one is in very good health. And Bonnie is in extremely poor health, and just thought I would mention a couple things here about her. She has had several strokes, and she's really in poor shape. And I know Mr. Kohler, who he has a little bit of dementia, but not not extreme dementia, but he does tend to forget things. And he tends to call me quite often to ask me to come to anoint Bonnie. Now I anointed her two or three times over the last year, but he calls me really at least once a week and asks me to come to anoint her. Now I don't anoint her when I come. I go and pray for her, because there's no reason just to keep being anointed over and over, something like that, because God, God hears our prayers. But I know just since the feast, I think he's called me, I believe it's five times, he called me again yesterday afternoon. I went over there last night. They sent her home from the hospital, and the doctor said there's nothing really they could do, that she needs hospice, and she's, quite frankly, not going to live much longer, unless God decides to perform a miracle in that regard. Now, we all get older, and our health, mankind is not designed to live forever in the physical life. But I talked to the son yesterday, and he mentioned the doctor said that I'm not sure all the details, but somehow her mind is not able to compute properly, and she's had strokes, and she's got a number of issues. Now, she can surprise you sometime, because the son was telling me, because when the father called me yesterday and I was going to go over there, my first response is, well, I can't. You know how your first response is, okay, he's calling me again. Then your second response is, wait a minute, we're supposed to serve one another. And so I was glad to go over there and happy to go over there to pray for her and ask God to comfort them. But the son, who doesn't attend, used to be when he was younger, I think, but he talked to me and told me he thought that he knew this was a burden. And I said, no, it's really not, because it really isn't a burden, because I'm happy to go over there and see them. Now, I'm happy that they live in Knoxville. I'm happy that I don't have to come to London every time. But yet, I want to go over there and just comfort as any way I can, humanly speaking. And whenever I go, Mr. Kohler will talk to me almost every time about the past and some things in the past. And he mentioned to me yesterday that they had been married since 1962, and he mentioned to me, he says, if I had it all to do over again, I'd make the same decision, I'd marry the same person. And I thought, well, that was a nice thing to hear from a husband that loves his wife and is very, very worried about her, not living. And after I prayed for her, he said something that just made me sort of, I didn't really know how to take it. He said, Bonnie, now you're going to be healed. And you know what? I didn't want to say, no, she's not, because God can heal her. God can do anything. But like I said, on the other hand, when we get to a certain age, we're elderly, and some people die the first day of their life. They don't even live an hour. And other people live to be, we've got a lady in Kingsport that just turned 99. She comes to church every week. So you just never know. You just never know. But what I would say is that we're going to call hospice in, and the son was telling me how the father doesn't understand how sick she is. And so I just would ask you to pray for Bonnie Kohler, and her husband's name's Roger, and the family, the son's Roger Jr., that God would comfort them and do what's best for the family, because just like the son was telling me, his father doesn't seem to understand. Even though the doctors talked to them and the doctor said there was nothing they could do, And again, as I want to emphasize, you know, God can do anything. And God, I remember, I'll just give you an example once. Fred Kellers was mentioned this once. There was a man down in Florida when he was living in Fort Lauderdale, had the Fort Lauderdale congregation, and this man had cancer. And they were going to have surgery. And before surgery, the doctor told the family, not even God could take care of this. Well, that was, like Fred Keller said, well, that was the best thing he could ever say. God's not going to take that. And he said, not even God can solve this problem. And then they started the surgery, and they couldn't even find any cancer. Now, that's a nice story. Then the one thing, the end of the story, so Fred said that a year or two after that, the man quit attending church, even after God had done this amazing thing. So we're all human beings. We all are fallible human beings. We all are thankful that we have a loving God. So I would just mention that as we know, God can do anything, and sometimes God does the most amazing things. But please pray for the family and help them and help the Kohlers, you know, during this difficult time that they're going through. I want to I've got a title here. You always ask me what the title is, and my title for the sermon today is "Are You a Wise Guy?" Now you could take that two ways, couldn't you? Are you or am I a wise guy? Now I don't mean a smart aleck. I mean a wise person. Now, and I guess a better way to put it is, are you or I a person of wisdom? Now, better yet, are you a person of godly wisdom? Let's just keep, you know, breaking it down. So each of us can answer that question privately, and I think it's safe to say probably you'll say the same thing I say about myself. Sometimes I use godly wisdom, and there are times I haven't. And the Bible talks about the one who doesn't use godly wisdom as being a fool. And I've been a fool at times in my life, and I would trust you probably feel you have too from time to time. But overall, are we a wise person gaining a godly wisdom? Proverbs talks a lot about this subject, and I thought I would turn to Proverbs 9. Proverbs 9 to begin. Penny must have bought me this shirt, because this shirt drives me crazy because it doesn't have a little pocket to put my anything in here, and I think, drives me crazy. I wasn't a very wise person to say that, was I? Because I'll be hearing about that. But Proverbs 9, it's a lovely shirt. I really like it a lot, though. Proverbs 9, she said, Verse 10, and you know the scripture. It's very, very famous scripture. And it can't be any truer. Of course, all the Bible's true, but this scripture says the fear, you know, not just frightening, but the respect, the awesomeness, the understanding, the ramifications of God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So before we can start becoming wise, right off the bat, God says we need to learn to fear Him in the proper way. Proper way, not like, well, I mean, I don't think I need to explain that any further. The fear of God, or the fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, it's human nature to think you're right. It's human nature to just think you're right about things. Now, we know the Bible, and from the Bible, that there's a wisdom of the world that's contrasted to the wisdom of God. Now, I'm going to give you a test today. You don't have to even write down the answers, because it's called the easiest test in the world. It's made to make anyone feel intelligent, smart. 10 questions. And I wrote down here, somebody said, taking this test will make anyone feel smarter. 10 questions. Number one. Again, you can just think of the answers. You'll probably get it right like that. How long did the 100 Years' War last? Number two, what country makes Panama hats? Number three, from which animal do we get catgut? Told you it was easy. Number four, what month do the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? Number five, aren't you feeling better now? What is a camel's hair brush made of? There's only nine questions. Oh, well. That makes it harder to judge it, doesn't it? Because if you there's 10, each time you miss one, it's 10% off. But no, we had to make it hard here. All right, number six, the Canary Islands in the Pacific Island are named after what animal? Number seven, what is King George VI's first name? And two more, what color is a purple finch? And finally, where are Chinese gooseberries from? All right, you feel better now? So I'll give you the answers, which you, I'm sure you think you already know. How long did the Hundred Years' War last? 116 years. Now you're not feeling so smart, are you? Number two, what country makes Panama hats? Ecuador. You know what's coming now, don't you? You're thinking, did I get anything right? From what animal do we get catgut? Sure, not cats. Sheep and horses. What month do the Russians celebrate the October Revolution? Well, you got one chance out of 12, don't you? Or 11, if you know it's not going to be October, and the answer is November. Those Russians are odd sometimes. What is a camel's hair brush made of? Squirrel's fur. Don't hear that much laughing now. What the Canary Islands in the Pacific are named after what animal? This one makes no sense to me. If the answer is the dog, what was King George VI's first name? Albert. And I've thought about this before, but my mother said they used to call, again, this was back in the 1930s, and when she's growing up, actually maybe the 20s even, but she said that they would call the grocery store and say, do you have Prince Albert in a can? You know, that's, and they would say yes, because it's a type of a tobacco or something. And she said they would say, we better let him out then. And you know, that's the type of things people used to think to do. Today, it's more like, let's not even go there. Okay, what color is a purple finch? Well, you know it's not purple, so it's crimson. And finally, where are Chinese gooseberries from? And they are from New Zealand. Now, see, it wasn't as simple as you thought. Now, there is an area. You know, people can acquire knowledge and knowledge and knowledge and facts and so forth. I remember my mother used to tell me, and I don't remember this, but she said when I was 5 years old, they would take me, when the relatives would come over, they would have me recite the names of all the presidents right in a row, starting with George Washington, and I can't do that now. I can't probably get past the first two or three. You know, I can tell you the last one was back then anyway, was Eisenhower when I was doing that. See, it's harder now because they've gotten more presidents. But I had some knowledge, but there's an area between knowledge and wisdom. Now, we all want to gain knowledge. We want to bring it into wisdom. But there's an area between knowledge, which is just the gathering of facts, and wisdom. And what does God say in the Bible? The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God, isn't it? So between knowledge and wisdom, you just don't go straight to the accumulation of facts, knowledge, to being wise. You have to acquire something else, and that is understanding. We get knowledge by things, and then by understanding. Like the Bible, you don't just look at the Bible the first time you look at it and know everything. The Bible is something your whole life you spend learning about the Bible and becoming by the knowledge that's in the Bible, that God has to help us to see it. And by acquiring that knowledge and gaining understanding of that knowledge, then in the end, hopefully, we become wise, don't we? And wisdom is something we grow at. Nobody has total wisdom like God does, but we grow toward it. Now, have you ever heard the statement, oh, you can prove anything you want from the Bible? Well, that's not true. But people will say that all the time. If somebody asks you, you know, if they bring up a topic and something about the Bible that they don't really want to agree with, you'll hear, you know, like the God's laws or something. You know, they say God's laws are done away, and it doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that God's laws are done away. God's holy, righteous laws. And if they get totally stumped and they have nowhere else to go, sometimes you'll hear the statement, well, you can prove anything from the Bible. That's in other words of saying, oh, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to think too hard because that might make me have to change what I've done a little bit. Well, wisdom is the proper application of knowledge and understanding, which brings us to wisdom, which gives us the ability to make correct decisions in our life. I've told this more than once, I'm sure, but I remember back in the Feast of Tabernacles in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it was probably 1992 or 93 or somewhere back in there, and at the Feast of Tabernacles that year, we had a family day, and it was up in, I can't remember the name, Raccoon Mountain up in Chattanooga area, and I remember that I was asked to put together a test. And what I was supposed to do, we had 10 questions. 10 basics is easy. Now, again, I made the test out, so it's going to easily be easy for me. I'm going to think, hey, this is easy because I made out the test. I knew the answers. But it's not always that easy if you don't make out the test. And I actually put together these 10 questions, simple Bible questions, supposedly. And I remember one was like, which of these four is not one of the Gospels? Matthew, Mark, Luke, or Revelation? Seems pretty easy to us, doesn't it? And then I've heard the story over the years that, you know, they'll say most people, and I've never understood, I always thought, how is this true? They'll say most people that call themselves Christian cannot name the four Gospels. And I think, well, that's impossible. But yet, no, it's not impossible. It's what, you know, facts will show. But if you could get 7 of those 10 right, you would go to the next level, and there'd be 10 questions, which are supposed to be a little harder. And if you could get 7 of those 10 right, you would go to the final set of 10 questions, and what we were trying to do was determine who was could get the best score of anyone at the Feast of Tabernacles that year. Smartest person, knowledge-wise, I guess you could say, at the Feast of Tabernacles that year in Chattanooga, and there were hundreds of people took that test. And because people, you know, I remember we had all these tables set up, people were coming and going, the entire thing, and we're going to give a prize to the winner, and it was going to be a Bible. Well, you've heard this before, most of you, but what was amazing to me was, I don't remember if it was half, but it was close to half or maybe even above half. I think close to half at least of the people that took that test could not get 7 out of 10 right, although they attended church for years, many of them. They couldn't get 7 out of 10 basic questions. Now, most people that could get 7 out of 10 of the first test could get 7 out of 10 of the second. And then the third test was hard. I tried to find hard questions, of which. Now, after all that, and many of you have heard this before, but after all that, all the people who took the test, hundreds of people took the test, the person who had the highest score of anyone at the Feast of Tabernacles that year was blind. He was blind. He got the best score of anybody there, of all the people at the Feast of Tabernacles. He was blind. Now, it tells you something, doesn't it? It tells you something. Now, we read where it said the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And we all like to think of ourselves as, well, I started to say highly intelligent. I don't think of myself as highly intelligent. We always like to think of ourselves as you know, above average in intelligence and wise. But I know sometimes I don't feel that wise. But we're to grow toward wisdom, aren't we? Proverbs 25, another proverb I wanted to read. Proverbs 25, verse 11. And you've heard this scripture probably many times too. A word fitly spoken, is like apples of gold. That's a pretty nice apple, isn't it? If it's of gold. And in settings of silver. You know, some people just have the tendency to be able to say things in the right way. I wish I always had that ability. But sometimes I say things exactly the wrong way, and I'm thinking, what did I do that for? But the point is, wisdom doesn't just come through the spirit of hard knocks. Now, you know, you can grow up and you can have some rough times, and you can grow and you can really develop wisdom over time. But I've heard the old story, there's no fool like an old fool. You know, some of the dumbest people, some of the most unenjoyable people to be around in our lives are people that have just kept banging their head against the wall for year after year after year. But the real point is whether or not we learn from our mistakes. So let's ask ourselves some questions to help us determine just how much godly wisdom we have. I'm sure none of us would mistake ourselves for Jesus Christ, but yet we should be learning to acquire wisdom as we go through life. Now, I have a few points here. Now, it's interesting. Mr. Cowan and I are taking these classes over the Internet, and I just took a class this week, and it mentioned the man who's teaching the class said, never, ever, ever have more than 3 points. Well, I very seldom have that view. But so I'm gonna break that rule right here, right off the bat. But I did understand what he was saying. You know, the more points you have, the more confusing he was mentioning. And when he said this, I thought of a person that I remember used to do this back when I was living in Pasadena. He was talking about, he heard a sermon one time. The man said, and now I'm going to give 17 points on how to. And this speaker said he thought, oh, 17 points. Well, it's kind of frightening, isn't it, when you've got that many? And I don't have 17 points. But this speaker also made another comment, which was a little bit, it could be discouraging or encouraging. It said, most people, when you give a sermon, 90% of what you said will be forgotten within a couple of hours. So I thought, well, that's, in one sense, that's kind of discouraging, but in another sense, I could just give the same sermon over and over, and you may not even know it. I remember once Fred Kellers was giving a sermon in Jackson, Tennessee, he was telling me, and he said he gave the sermon, and he was there a couple weeks later, and he was giving a sermon, he was going through it, and somebody raised their hand and said, you gave this same sermon 2 weeks ago. And he said, oh, okay. You always write down the date you give a sermon. Then you still mess up sometimes. Okay, let's ask ourselves some questions here about gaining wisdom. Remember, knowledge is the accumulation of facts, and as we develop understanding from that knowledge, that can bring us to wisdom. Now, number one, do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? Now, it's easy to say, of course I trust God more, but by our actions, sometimes we show that we trust ourselves more than we trust God. Over in Proverbs 3, verse 5, and this is another scripture I've heard many, many times read, and I've thought about it many, many times. I've read this verse many, many times, but it's something to think about. It says, trust in the Lord with all, A-L-L, with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. Well, otherwise, think about how people come up with all these ideas. And they're so set in their ways, and this idea is right. And this is okay. And that's right, and I know this is right. But oftentimes, it's not just by looking at the Bible, it's looking at what they want to be the Bible or the facts. So do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? I don't remember who the singer of this song was. It's an old country music song. But the name of it was "I Just Want to Be Mad for a While." And it's probably 15 or 20 years old. But it was "I Just Want to Be Mad for a While." And I remember a phrase in that song said, "I think I'm right, and I think you're wrong, so leave me alone. I just want to be mad for a while." Does that not sound typical of what we see sometimes in this world? Just don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind what I want to do. I've made up my mind about this. And it's like saying, "God, go on vacation. Leave me alone for a while." Well, in the scripture we just read, where I read, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understandings," the next verse says, "And all your ways acknowledge" who? Acknowledge Him. Acknowledge God. We acknowledge Him by doing what He says in the Bible, not by doing what we want the Bible to say. And people have made things up like, you know, I remember when I was growing up, you would hear people say it's wrong to dance. Well, David danced. Remember when he danced? And now there's wrong dancing, of course, types of dancing. But or it's wrong to play cards. People come up with all these ideas. I remember my uncle was a Baptist minister, and he would not put vanilla extract in his eggnog. My family would make eggnog, just plain old eggnog. And he wouldn't put a drop of vanilla flavoring because somehow there was a tiny, 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 tiny percent of alcohol in it. And I remember him making the comment. I remember even as a little kid hearing this, he said, "My lips will never taste alcohol." Later, he apologized about that. But, you know, they make all these things that the Bible doesn't say. So in all your ways acknowledge Him, and if we do, it says He will direct your paths as we learn to trust God. Now, one other scripture here. Over in Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 10. Jeremiah was a prophet that God called, and we read the story. Jeremiah said, "I don't want to be a prophet." But God said, "No, Jeremiah, I've chosen you to be a prophet." And in verse 23 and 24, Jeremiah talking to God, the words are recorded here. I don't know how it all came about, how it worked out, but Jeremiah wrote down the words that he had said, and I guess a prayer or talking to God, however it may be. He said, verse 23 of Jeremiah 10, "O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself." Mankind, with our human nature, we want to feel like we know all the answers. And yet, look at what is happening to our country. Not just the world, but our country. Our country is rapidly moving to a state of anarchy. I mean, it's rapidly moving to a state of anarchy. Jeremiah said, "I know the way of man is not himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. O Lord," he said, "correct me." Jeremiah asked God to correct him. But then he adds, "but with justice." And then he says, "and not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing." You know, we need to ask God to correct us, and we also need to say, "God, be merciful," because we know how fallible it is to be a human being, how easy it is. A human being do not always handle things as well as possible. I know I heard yesterday that I saw on television it said that President Obama was going to decide whether to send troops to Syria. And I just saw that on the news. And then when I was going over to the Kohlers yesterday evening, I heard them talking about that President Obama had announced that he was going to send 50 special ops agents to Syria. 50. Now, I'm sure the special ops agents are, you know, some of the most highly trained. But think, if we sent, I could say London, but I'll say, if 50 soldiers were sent to Knoxville, how much could they do? You know what I'm, you know, in my thought, it's almost like they're putting those 50 men or women or whoever the case may be in grave danger to be sending them over there. So if we're not going to send them over there with a purpose, why put them in all that danger? That was just my thoughts. But then I heard the press secretary say how somebody asked him that question, this Josh Earnest, and he said, when the American soldier gets involved, good things happen. And I'm thinking, 50 people? 50 people going to a country of Syria? What is the point of that? Well, I'm not always wise, and it's not my responsibility to make decisions like that, but I want to ask myself, 50 people? Does that seem like that makes any sense? To send 50 people over there, and we're bragging about this? We tend to trust ourselves. I heard they were making fun of Ben Carson the other day, and they were talking about all their tax plans, and they asked him, and he says, "Well, I kind of think that maybe, you know, God required a tithe in the Bible. I think maybe we should just everybody give a tithe." And they were laughing at him. They were making fun of him, like, "You guy, you're so out of touch." It's easy to make fun of somebody, but I could go on forever on this. But I know yesterday I was hearing them talk about, they were talking about Donald Trump, and, you know, let's not go there too far, but how his tax plan was going to raise the deficit $10 million, $10 trillion, not million, $10 trillion. Isn't that an easy figure to throw out, $10 trillion? And, of course, nobody knows how they get the $10 trillion or blah, 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 blah. Well, today I was listening to the news, and now they're calling it $12 trillion. In one day, it's gone from $10 trillion to $12 trillion. They say these things just like they're absolute facts, but yet they just throw up these numbers. These numbers. It's amazing. So, do we trust ourselves more than we trust in God? A second point I've got down here is, do we get all the facts? Do we get all the facts? Usually, we don't, but usually people have a tendency to want to get, you know, the fact, get, just make a decision with all the facts. I know Yogi Berra, who died, he was a baseball player, and he was known for making sort of humorous statements. Remember one of them, he said, "When you come into a fork on the road, take it." You've got to think about that one. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Well, another one he said was, "I'm not lost. I'm just making good progress." You know, if you look at a map and you turn the wrong way, you will get further and further lost, won't you? Remember, to gain wisdom, we need facts, knowledge, plus understanding, which helps us to gain wisdom. Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18. Verse 13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears it." Now, I know Penny could say, "Oh, man, now we're talking about my husband." You know, she'll start to say something, and I'll say, "Yeah, I know," and she hadn't even finished the statement sometimes. And she might not even be talking about what I'm answering, because I don't take the time to listen to all of it sometimes. That's my only fault in life, but I thought I would point that one out. You know I'm kidding. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it's a folly and it's a shame to him. Well, oftentimes we don't get all the facts. It's okay to admit we don't know everything, because we don't. You know, I have people ask me Bible questions sometimes, and quite frankly, sometimes I don't know the whole answer. And I'll have to say, well, let me look into it. And yet, it's so much easier to want to just give an answer where people will think you're smart, but some of the answers you give aren't always the best. I know a man that used to be an associate pastor in a church area that I used to be in years ago. I remember him telling me, he was laughing about this. And then I look back at it, and this particular man, he's completely left. I don't even know if he goes to church anywhere anymore. He's actually a used car salesman now. But somebody called him one time, and somebody called him and said, it was a holy day. I don't remember which one. I think it was trumpets. And they called, and they said, I cannot go to both services. Would you tell me which one to go to? Like they can't make. And he said, well, go to the one in the morning, because that's when the offering's taken up. And he thought, that's so funny. I told him to make sure they give that offering. Well, you know, I don't think God thought that was too funny. But yet, sometimes we feel like we've got to have all the answers. Let's look at 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. Now, this is when Solomon, King Solomon, died. In fact, verse 43 of chapter 11 of 1 Kings, the final verse says, Then Solomon rested with his fathers. He was buried in the city of David his father, and Rehoboam his son reigned in his place. So Rehoboam was the king. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. Now, so it was when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it. He was still in Egypt. He had fled there. You could read about that earlier. He had fled that in the presence of King Solomon earlier for reasons. And he'd been dwelling in Egypt. Well, he sent and he called. They sent and they called him, called Jeroboam. And Jeroboam and the whole congregation of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam. Now, remember, there were the 12 tribes of Israel. That time they were all united together, the 12 tribes of Israel, and they went to Rehoboam, and they said, Your father, Solomon, made our yoke heavy. Now therefore, would you lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which you put on us, and we'll serve you. So there was still not that solidity in the kingdom of the 12 tribes. There was, you know, it was not that solid, the whole group of Israel as a whole. So Rehoboam told those that came, the congregation, depart from me for 3 days and come back to me, and the people departed. Now what did Rehoboam do? You know, King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he was still alive, and he said, How do you advise me to answer these people? These were the men, the older men, in this particular case, that had served with Solomon, and this is what they told Rehoboam in verse 7. They said, If you will be a servant to these people, they told Rehoboam, You need to be a servant. Well, he's like, Oh, I'm king. Said, no, if you'll be a servant to these people, if you'll show them serving, and if you'll serve them, so if you'll be a servant to these people, if you will serve them, what does every single candidate always say? They want to do it because they love the people. And everyone, in most cases, I'm not every case, but most will say, but I'm the best one. I'm the one. I'm the one that can solve all the problems you need so badly. And they told Rehoboam, you need to be a servant to these people. And if you'll answer them, and if you'll speak good words to them, then they'll be your servants forever. They'll serve you if you'll serve them. It'll be a wonderful situation. But he rejected the counsel which they gave him. And he consulted the young men, the millennials. Now, not every millennial's bad, but this is what he basically did here. He consulted the young men who had grown up with him, his friends, all that grew up with Rehoboam, the younger ones who didn't have the experience in this particular case. Again, it doesn't mean that because you're a younger person, you don't have wisdom, but in this particular case, most of them didn't. And in our case in this society today, we are so determined to make sure. I have so many parents, they'll say, I don't want my child to go through what I had to go through. I don't want them to have to suffer. I don't want them to not be able to have all these things. Well, we're in a world where sometimes it's good to have to suffer a little bit in the right type of way. You know, have to learn lessons. Well, he consulted the young men who grew up with him, who stood before him, all his friends. And he said to them, what counsel do you give me? And they said, he asked, how do I answer these people that asked me to lighten their yoke, which your father put on? And then the young men who had grown up with him, all his peers, his friends, they said, you should tell them this. You should say, your father made our yoke heavy, but you will make it light on us. Well, this is what you shall tell them if they ask you that. Tell them, my fingers shall be thicker than my father's waist. And whereas my father laid a heavy yoke on you, I'll add to your yoke. And where my father chastised you with whips, I'll chastise you with scourges. I'm going to show you I'm the boss. He didn't get all the facts. He just listened to the ones that he wanted to hear. And you know the rest of the story. Israel split into two nations, the nation of Israel, and then basically the nation of Judah and Levi. They just broke in two. Never were back together again. And yet today people think that when you talk about an Israelite, you're only talking about the Jews or the tribe of Judah. But that's not the way God saw the Israelites. Israelites were a nation, were they not? They didn't get all the facts. Here's a third point. Do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? We all have to have a plan. We all have to have a roadmap. But is it a God-oriented plan? Well, where do you get a God-oriented plan? By the Bible, don't we? By looking at what the Bible tells us. We don't plan to fail. Does anybody just say, I want to fail. I want to fail. I want to mess up. No, we tend to fail sometimes because our plans are flawed. Our plans aren't what we need. And that's because of that, we do not acquire wisdom because our plans are all out of skew. Proverbs, again, verse 4. Proverbs, verse 4, or chapter 4, I should say. Verse 25. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Don't be looking around at all the other stuff that can get you off course. All the things that'll get you out of whack. It says, let your eyes look straight ahead. Have a plan, God-oriented plan. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Let your eyelids look right before you. Don't be lusting after all the things in the world that may seem so much important, that really will get you off focus. People say they want to be in the kingdom, yet they need a roadmap. We need a roadmap for getting there. When I was in Ambassador College, there was a student teacher, and it was Old Testament survey. He helped, and he occasionally would take the class, and it was a night class on Old Testament survey. And I remember one night, I remember so clearly, I remember even where I was sitting and everything, and I remember him talking about some things, and he made this comment He made this comment in class. He said, I have read the Bible so much over the last few years that I am going to take a break from reading the Bible. Big flare shot up in my mind. He said, I am going to start reading more other books than the Bible. Now, sure, you can read other books. That's not the point. But he said, I'm going to quit reading the Bible for a while because I'm just tired of it. Well, there wasn't 2 or 3 months later that he had quit attending church completely. God-oriented plan for our lives. You know, at the Olympics, you know, in gymnastics, there's one of the events called the balance beam, remember? And you'll see these people do all types of flips and things on the balance beams. Now, I don't really see, maybe there's maybe 2 or 3 people in here that I think could maybe stay on the balance beam for over a few seconds. I'll leave it at that. But that's hard. It even looks hard because it is hard. But yet they can do all these tricks and things on the balance beams. But they have to work on their balance. I was telling the Englands that when at camp last year, I went out to play softball. And I was okay as long as they hit ground balls. But when they hit those balls up in the air, I'd look up there, and I'd see sometimes 3 or 4 balls. It's like, which one is the one to catch? And I don't think I ever once caught the right ball. But I thought, what happened to my balance? Well, it's not as good as it used to be. It's not as good. Don't believe that. You're not getting older. You're getting better. That's a fallacy there. But I remember back a company I used to work for, they sent us back to a place in New Mexico once for team building. And one thing they had us do was climb a telephone pole. This telephone pole had, I don't know what you call them, stakes or something sticking out of them. And you climb this telephone pole to the top, and there was a little platform which was about twice the size of one of those songbooks. You know, enough room to stand. Now, they had you all locked in where if you fell, you weren't going to get hurt. You were all protected by these harnesses and so forth. But you were to climb that telephone pole, and when you get to the top, and the hardest part was that final step, because, you know, you get up there, and then you had to get up to the little part. And I was amazed how many people couldn't do that. Men and women that were seemed very fit and very, because they had a fear of the height and fear of so forth. And I'll be happy to tell you I did make it. I want everyone to know that. But it wasn't easy. I'll be honest with you. It wasn't easy. But when you got to the top, they told you, don't look down. Focus on something in the distance. Just find something to focus on that. And then when they tell you to jump, then jump. But they said, don't look down or you'll fall. And I made it to the top with a lot of struggle. And I got up there and I focused out there. But then I looked down. And then I went down. Because your balance. Well, you know, do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? If we look around, like that proverb says, don't be looking all around at all the other things that could get you off course. Stay focused on God's way. On God's way. Now let's look at Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10. Paul was speaking to the Israelites. And he was speaking also to the Gentiles. But he was talking about the Israelites. And verse 1 and 2 of Romans 10 says, brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God is for Israel that they may be saved. He loved his fellow Israelites, but yet many of them had turned so far away and even rejected Jesus Christ, the Messiah. He says, for I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God. Many of these people had a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. They had all these rules and regulations that weren't in the Bible. They had all these things that they said that they needed to do, but they weren't in the Bible. They had a zeal but they were lacking something. And Christ had to deal with all kind of groups that weren't balanced. Remember the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Zealots, all these people. They had a lot of zeal, but they lacked balance. This is the way to do it, and it wasn't what Jesus Christ had said. It wasn't what the Bible said. They came up with all these rules and regulations that weren't in the Bible. Well, Proverbs 13:20, I'm not going to turn there, but it says, if we walk with the wise, we will be wise. If Rehoboam had listened to what the wisdom that these men that had been through the experience, who knows what would have happened in a positive way. So do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? And I'll give one more point here, and a final point, is do we handle conflict wisely? Now, everybody has conflict in life. Probably, when you ask yourself, do we handle conflict properly, the answer is sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. Proverbs 20, verse 3. Proverbs 20, verse 3. It is honorable. Notice, it is honorable for a man or a woman to stop striving. Some people just love to argue about everything, do they not? It is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. It doesn't take a lot to start an argument, does it? It doesn't start a lot to start a quarrel. But yet, what almost every quarrel start with? Every time, basically, a quarrel starts by what? A foolish remark. And yet, then that foolish remark to a person or persons, the person that gets the foolish remark told to them comes back with another foolish remark. And then it escalates and escalates, and it turns into a major quarrel, and it turns into sometimes we see people shooting, killing themselves over arguments, and it just never seems to end. It never seems to end. It says any fool can start a quarrel. Anybody can start a quarrel. That's not anything to be proud of. Let's look at Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4. I actually gave this sermon one other time. I had 7 points, and I narrowed them down to 4 today. See, I'm trying to get down to 3. And I actually put some of the scriptures. You're probably thinking, yeah, I'd notice it was disjointed. But I was trying to do what the speaker told me to do. Genesis 4, verse 6. So the Lord said to Cain, or you know the story, Cain and Abel had an offering, and God accepted Abel's offering of the sheep of the ground and Cain's offering of vegetables God didn't respect because of the way he handled the offering. It wasn't the proper offering. And he did not respect Cain's offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. Cain was not happy that God was angry, because God said, that was not a proper offering, Cain. And Cain's response was not, okay, what do I need to do better? It was anger. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, Cain? Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? Or why have you got this sour look on your face, Cain? And then God said, if you do well, will you not be accepted? In other words, Cain, just change the way you're acting, and it'll all be okay. If you do well, won't you be accepted? But if you don't do well, Cain's sin lies at the door. You're on the edge of a real problem, Cain, is basically what he was saying. If you don't do well, sin lies at the door, and it's sin's desire is for you, Cain. But you should rule over it. Rule over that anger is what God was telling Cain. So Cain talked with Abel, his brother. And it came to pass, as they were in the field, that Cain rose against Abel, his brother, and killed him. Now, it doesn't fill in all the blanks here, but it says, Cain and Abel were in the field. Do you not think there were words spoken? I don't think they just went out in the field and immediately Cain just went out and killed him. Probably some angry words, probably some insults. Who knows what happened? But Cain was in the wrong. And God said, you got to rule over this, Cain. You got to rule over this way. It's Satan wants you to sin. Satan wants you to fail. Odds are, certainly Cain had some angry words, some angry feelings before he slew his brother. So are you, or so am I, a wise man or a wise woman? Ask ourselves these questions again. I think I gave us four. Do we trust ourselves more than we trust God? It's easy to say we trust God. Look at our money. It says, in God we trust. Our money says, in God we trust. But do we act that way? Do we get all the facts? Do we follow a God-oriented plan for our lives? Do we handle conflict wisely? The point is, we need, you need, I need to grow in wisdom, don't we? And we put the facts together, which helps that to come understanding, and with God's help, we can become wise. Let's close by turning to Psalm 131. Psalm 131. That's a Psalm of David. And it's a short psalm. David said, Lord, my heart is not haughty. And my margin says, proud. My heart is not proud, nor are my eyes lofty. My margin says, arrogant. So it's like David says, Lord, my heart is not proud, and my eyes are not arrogant, neither do I concern myself with great matters. Now, my margin here says, basically, neither do I walk in difficult, walk in trying to think I know everything, nor with things too profound, and my margin says difficult there, for me. So in a sense it says, Lord, my heart is not proud, my eyes are not arrogant, neither do I walk in things of great matters, nor are things too difficult for me. Surely, David said, I have calmed and quieted my soul. How do we calm and quiet our soul? By obeying God. And as we turn to God, and as we learn God's way and grow in it and strive, and when we make mistakes, ask God for forgiveness and try to correct those mistakes and move forward, we will have a more of a calmed and quieted soul. There's nothing more sad than a person that just cannot get control of themselves. Because oftentimes it's because of the way they live their life. And they have all these reasons and all these medicines and so forth that are supposed to solve the problem. But yet, sin causes us to have a non-calm soul. Like a weaned child, David said, with his mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. Like comforted by the mother, the mother's milk, the mother's love, the mother's touch. O Israel, David said, hope in who? Hope in the Lord, hope in God. From this time forth and forevermore, David is saying, look to God for wisdom. And if we do, we can become wise.